Well, hello and welcome to Radio. I'm your host, Ray Weaver, and I have to tell you, I'm very kind of mixed emotions today. I'm happy because more people are listening to the podcast. I got a notice from somebody that in Denmark, I'm in what they call, you know, memoir type podcast. I'm pretty high up on the thing. So that makes me feel good. But of course, if you know me, you know I'm pretty sad today because the great Gordon Lightfoot has passed away. And that's a loss, as far as I'm concerned. A loss for me, a loss for music fans everywhere. Now, you might be thinking, Ray, why don't you play some Gordon Lightfoot music? And you know what? I could do that. I could put some music in here. But you know what? I don't want to make it that easier on people that have never heard Gordon. I don't want to make it so, oh, he's playing the songs, I'll listen here. No, you know what I want you to do? I want you to go listen. I want you to find Lightfoot. I mean, you can stream anything these days. You can find it anywhere these days. A lot of you folks listening probably already have the records or the CDs or the cassettes even. I want you to listen. I want you to just marvel in this career, this man that lived to be 84 years old, and marvel at the music that he made. Just think about it. Think about it, you know. If you could read my mind and Carefree Highway and all of those records and the stuff that maybe didn't get heard a lot or enough, the early stuff, Early Morning Rain, Bitter Green. I remember working at my very first radio job, which we've talked about a lot here at WDDY in Gloucester, Virginia, which for the most part was what used to be called an easy listening station. Bert Kampfert, Lenny D, some Sinatra, and Johnny Mathis. And I developed an affinity for some reason, even though I was a rock and roll kid coming out of the Beatles and Stones, Dave Clark Five and that stuff. I developed an affinity for Johnny Mathis. All of a sudden, I found myself going, you know what? He's not that bad. He sings pretty good. And there was this one song called The Wherefore and the Why that I was just nuts about. And I would try to fit it into my show whenever I could. Whenever I could get it into the log, I'd put it in. And I just liked it. I just liked the power of the song and the way it sounded. And the joy expressed in the lyrics. You know, come on, sunshine, what can you show me? I'm out to find the wherefore and the why. I just thought, wow, what a really cool, easy listening record. Well, of course, it turns out that the wherefore and the why, unbeknownst to me at the time at all, was a Gordon Lightfoot song. So, you know, the great Gordon Lightfoot is gone, and I'm of a certain age where I've lost a lot of my heroes. Levon Helm, people that I looked up to, people that I always had some sort of idea that I would make records with someday, or at least meet someday and be able to tell them, you know, you meant so much to me growing up, because I was not, shall we say, the big man on campus when I was in high school or elementary school or even junior high school. And sometimes when they did pay me attention, it wasn't the kind of attention you wanted to have paid to you. So I became friends with the people on my records. I became friends with the people that when I got home and I would take my really, really cheap stereo speakers and put them next to my head, literally one speaker on one side and one speaker on the other, and listen to John Fogerty and Creedence Clearwater Revival and the Beatles and the Stones and Grand Funk Railroad and then Donovan and Dylan and those people. They were my friends. I could come home to them and to hell with whatever happened in school, to hell with whatever bully tried to push me into a gym locker or whatever, because I had those friends at home. And there were a few people in my life that recognized that. I remember one time when Clarence Clemons from the E Street Band passed away, I was devastated. And my cousin Kenny wrote to me on Facebook or one of the social medias and said, I know this is hard on you because these people were like your friends. And I've been fortunate enough over the years to meet some of my heroes and never been let down by any of them. never been let down by being in radio and meeting Willie Nelson or Vince Gill or Rick Springfield or some of the people that I've interviewed, Patti Loveless, over the years. They've been fabulous. They've been fabulous people. The Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. I met those guys backstage at the Wheeling, West Virginia Jamboree at WWVA, and they couldn't have been more fun. I remember sitting there, and whatever band was on before the Dirt Band, whatever band was the opening act, the drummer played a riff, and Jimmy Fadden got up and ran to the side of the stage and yelled out, "You owe me a quarter," because apparently Jimmy thought the drummer was stealing his riff. And these people meant a lot to me. Lightfoot informed my music as long as I've been doing music. How could he not? You know, working in the folk traditions back in the days, in the 60s and 70s. I mean, how could Lightfoot not be someone that informed your music? And yes, you probably are hearing my dog bark in the background. That's okay. This is an organic podcast that happens off the top of my head. So there's the Mighty Max, my Australian shepherd out there, letting me know that he would really like to come in. So I may have to take a little break here and go let him in. You know, it's funny because in some weird way, I'm more connected with people that I've admired my whole life than I ever thought possible because of all the social media stuff. And Eric Anderson is on Facebook and so many of the people, Janice Ian, they're out there and you can literally have some sort of dialogue back and forth with them. And it's kind of weird, kind of strange. I mean, it's not a personal relationship, of course, but it is like something I could not have imagined back when I was young. And these people were, I hesitate to admit, but they were prophets and poets to me. But the great Gordon Lightfoot has passed away. And I would recommend you go find his Don Quixote record, or you find, you know what, if you want to be lazy, get Gord's Gold, the first one, not the second one. Because for some reason, on the second one, he recorded a lot of his songs and added synthesizers and weird stuff. But the original Gord's Gold is as good a collection of music as you're going to find. And it kind of reinvents some of his earlier songs, and the recordings are better. And he sounds great. So if you want to get some kind of clue as to what I'm talking about, go there. Because it's a fine record. I think I've had it in pretty much every iteration you can possibly have a record. Vinyl and cassette and CD and digital and whatever else is available. And I still listen to it quite a bit. So that's kind of like why I'm half melancholy. I'm of an age where a lot of my heroes, both musically and politically and literary and a lot of ways, you can feel the clock ticking. Hell, I can feel the clock ticking on myself. And it's weird. It's weird to be of an age where when someone dies at 84, you go, I've got a few years. Yeah, you know, at least 17, 20 years or so. But then someone else that you admire, that you've loved, that you've known your whole life, goes at 70 or 68 or 71 or 72, and you think, well, hell, I'm not that far away from that. Have I done everything? Have I accomplished everything? Have I accomplished anything? I've led this life that's just been here, there, radio, working for governors, working for police departments, doing public information, doing what I'm doing now, being on the radio. But it's never kind of settled because there was always that music thing, always there. I remember I was in Virginia Beach. I was at WCMS in Virginia Beach, and I was working the overnight shift. And the guy that was doing the morning shift had been there forever, and he was an icon. He was literally, probably in Virginia Beach, safe to say, the best-known radio announcer there at the time, and probably the highest paid. And I was working overnights. If you know radio, you know this. I'm working midnight to 6, midnight to 5:30, making maybe a little bit above minimum wage. And then the guy comes in at 6 o'clock, basically doing the same gig I'm doing, and he's making superstar money. And I never resented him for that. I never resented Joe for that, because he was somebody that I admired, somebody that I listened to, someone whose radio show was just, it was just like being in someone's living room, just kicked and relaxed. And he was just a great, great radio announcer. So I'm at CMS and I'm doing the overnights. I have to admit, I didn't get along with the program director very well. We had our moments because at that time, there was a lot of great music coming out from Nashville. Evan Welch was happening, Kieran Kane, Jamie O'Hara. There were a lot of people making good music. And for some reason, on our C rotation, now if you've never done radio, A rotation were the hits. B rotation could be hits that were going down or maybe something that they wanted to get back in that had been a hit maybe some months or about a year ago. And then C rotation was generally new stuff or stuff that was fading out. Now, C rotation was where you could try stuff. And instead of trying new music out of Nashville, the program director was playing the new Crosby, Stills, and Nash and adding in this kind of stuff. And so we were at loggerheads, but that's not the point. The point is that the guy that was doing the morning shift, who was the star, told the lady that ran the radio station, and this was a privately owned radio station, one of the few privately owned radio stations that I've ever actually worked at, told the boss, you've got a guy here doing overnights. You literally have a racehorse pulling a wagon, trying to tell her to bring me in to the fold, move me out of overnights, put me into a slot that would make a difference. And I think she would have, but I think that what happened then is all of a sudden I felt that, oh, wow, I could take that job and I could start making good money here and I could start getting comfortable. And as I often did in my life, I said, I'm not doing that because I'm going to be a rock and roll star. I'm going to be in the music business. And I gave my notice just within a couple of weeks or a month of Joe saying, you know, hey, give this guy a chance. I was out of there. It's not the first time I've done something like that in my life. I remember one time in between band gigs when I was in my teenage years, I had signed up, as you often do when you're a musician, with a temp service. I was working in a temp service and they put me to work at a plant in Baltimore that made different kinds of adhesives, glue and different kinds of things that make things stick, sticky notes and all of that kind of stuff. They put me to work there. Temp gig. I had no intention of taking it seriously or making it any part of my life. I was just at a temp gig. It was just a gig that I was taking until the band found work or until the summer season came around and we went back on the road, whatever. But it turns out that I was pretty good at the job. In those days with temp gigs, probably the same now, being pretty good at the job meant that I actually showed up for work, I was on time, and conscientious about doing whatever the gig was at the time, whatever they gave me, whether it was pushing a broom or carrying some boxes. It was just, yeah, you know, I was raised that if you had a job, you did the job. So anyway, the boss there took a liking to me with my hair down on my shoulders and everything else. But he took a liking to me and he came to me and he said, you know what? I know this is a temp gig for you, but we'd like to maybe talk to you about coming on and working your way up, starting out with an entry-level gig and moving up. And I think in a couple of years, you could move into management. You're smart. You know what to do. You're good at directing people. We'd really like to talk to you about that. So I went and talked to them. I went into the office and I talked to them about it, and it was a pretty good job. The pay wasn't a whole lot to start with, but it could get better, and the benefits were pretty good. And I thought, man, that's not bad. You know, that's not bad. I mean, at that time, I hadn't finished college. I didn't have much more than a high school education and a couple of community college credits under my belt. So I thought, yeah, you know, this is not bad. So I went home and I talked to my dad about it. My dad is not the kind of guy, was never the kind of guy that was big on the advice kind of thing. It just wasn't his way. He was a very quiet man. He was a very good dad, never much on, oh, you should do this or you shouldn't do that. He was just not that guy. So I said to him, I said, hey, Dad, you know, I've been offered like a full-time gig, a real job at this place that I'm working at temp now. The money's not bad. Benefits are good. And what do you think? And as I said, he wasn't much on dropping the fatherly advice kind of stuff. But he kind of paused and he said, well, you know, there's no question about it. There is absolutely nothing wrong with a steady gig, a steady job. There's nothing wrong with a steady job. And it's a good job. It's a good company. There's a future there. You get good money, get benefits. It's important. He said, but, you know, what's going to happen is you're going to get used to that money coming in. And then there'll be more money coming in. And you're going to get used to having that security blanket there. You're going to get used to those benefits. And who knows, you know, a couple of years, you know, you'll get a raise and you'll probably have a girlfriend. And you're looking at that girlfriend, you're making a little money and you think, yeah, you know what? Maybe we should get married. Maybe we should have a couple of kids because, you know, you'll have a job. You'll be able to support a family and you have a future. And that's absolutely fantastic. That's what life can be about. Now, remember, he's never said much to me about anything like this in my life. But he looked at me and he said, but your whole life, you've always wanted to make a run at this music thing. You've worked your whole life to do this music thing. If you take this job, you're going to have a good life. There's no question about it. You'll have a good life. But you won't have a music life. You won't have the life that you thought you would have because you won't be able to go out and play for a couple of weeks at a time or go to Nashville or pitch your songs or do the things that you do now because you'll have the job. And take it from me, when you have a job, the job is 5 days a week, 6 days a week, 8, 9, 10 hours a day, whatever it is, and that becomes your life. Not a bad life in any way. It's treated me well, but I don't think it's what you've aspired to all these years. And he was right. I didn't take the job. And over the years, I've had some moments where I looked at my brothers and my sisters and I looked at them with their nice houses and their nice cars and their 9-to-5 thing and they're going to holidays and going on vacation and they're having that life and I'm loading my amplifiers and my guitars into another beat up POS car, going to another gig where I might make $40 and thought, man. And I was envious, thinking, why am I doing this? As Dylan would say, on the road, heading to another joint, why do I keep on doing this? Because I can't not do it. And it's still there. I'm 67 years old, and I'm still going out and playing the music and still doing that thing that is in my blood, and I was born into it. It's never going to change. It's just not going to stop. And I'm not envious anymore. I've gotten to the point where I've realized that I'm very lucky. I sometimes look at people, though. They don't get it. They see me. They're like, wow, man, you live in Europe and you're going out and playing and you have this life where you play music and wow, that is so incredible. And I think, man, you don't have a clue. You don't have a clue of the traveling. You don't have the clue of the break even that, you know, you get to Norway and you play 3 nights and between the airline ticket and the hotel and the taxis and everything. If you're lucky, you break even. But that's all right. That's all right. It's never been about the money. And it's never been about the fame or the fortune, although either one would have been okay. It's always been about the sounds that are in my head. Yeah, there's just this thing that calls to me. And no matter what I've had to do in my life, no matter what jobs I've had, a job as a public information officer for a mayor of a city, I had a job working for the governor of the state of Maryland. I've had major market radio jobs. And you know what? They've always been side gigs because I'm a musician. I'm a songwriter. I'm a storyteller. So they're always side gigs. They're my side hustle. The gigs that paid the bills and gigs that gave me the benefits. So that was just, nah, I'm not going to last in that. And I think about it, and I don't really have any professional regrets on that level. And I guess, as usual, I'm rambling, but that's what came to mind to me when Gordon Lightfoot passed away. I thought, the paths that people like Lightfoot and Jackson Browne and Bob Dylan, Springsteen, John Prine. John Prine, the best friend that I ever had in my life, who never knew he was my friend. These people, I've carried them with me in my heart. And no, you know what? I'm not going to make it easy on you. Go find the music. Spend some time finding the music. Learn something. Learn things. Take 40, 30 minutes out of your day, whatever it takes, and go listen to Bruce Springsteen's Nebraska album, an album that he made completely accidentally because he didn't even know he was making an album. He sat down at the end of his bed in a house somewhere in New Jersey with a couple of Shure microphones and an acoustic guitar and an early model four-track cassette recorder, making what he thought were demos that he would give to the band and then they could make a whole album out of it, and found out in the course of doing this at night when he was singing quietly and reflecting quietly and writing lyrics to songs like Nebraska and Atlantic City and State Trooper and Highway Patrolman, Reason to Believe, he found out that he was telling stories that did not translate into the band context or the arena context or even in the major recording studio context. He had somehow or another accidentally found himself back in Hank Williams or Woody Guthrie territory, where these songs were what they were. And I would contend in this man's great career, that album, Nebraska, is literally, in my mind, the greatest work he's ever done. And most people, since it came sort of tucked in between, I think it was The River and then Born in the USA, a lot of people missed it. Go put it on. Take some time. Listen to music the way we used to listen to it when we would put on the whole first side, flip it over, and listen to the second side. Listen to this. Listen to him telling these stories that came from his childhood and yet at the same time reflected the, I guess, 1980s America that he was living in at the time, the Reagan years, and realize that this guy, this poor kid from New Jersey, was telling a story that everyone can relate to. So go find the music. Go look for it. These days, everything is literally dropped on our doorstep. We don't have to work for anything. Remember, if you ran across an old movie on TV back, you know, in the day, and you saw, man, they're playing, I don't know, Casablanca or whatever, you had to watch it. If you wanted to see it, you want to see Keith, you had to watch it because it wasn't going to be streaming tomorrow, and you don't know when it's going to come around again. You had to work for it. You heard a song on the radio that you liked, you had to listen to it because you didn't know when they were going to play it again. And you could sit there and you could call the DJ and you could say, hey, could you play, you know, they might. But they might not. But now it's all there. Sometimes I feel like some of the magic has gone out of consuming movies and music and that kind of stuff because we used to have to look for it. We used to have to work for it, even if it involved going to the library and checking it out. Now it's all there. I can literally get done talking to you, go on some streaming service and hear anything I want to hear at any time, which kind of removes some of the specialness from it, kind of removes some of the magic from it in my mind. Yeah, I'm glad it's there. I'm glad that I can, you know, punch a button and hear Dobie Gray sing Drift Away or hear Bobby Fuller Four sing I Fought the Law at the drop of a button where you used to have to wait for it. So I'm challenging you, even though it's not much work, to go and do a little work. Find some music, find a film. Find something that you haven't heard or listened to in a long time, or maybe ever listened to, and just go enjoy it, because so much of the stuff that we've loved is disappearing. So many of the people that we've admired are leaving us. They left us a legacy of work and of art. So go listen to it. So no music this week. Nothing from me except me babbling. I hope you've enjoyed it. As always, this is Radio. I'm Ray Weaver. I have a book called A Father's Heart. You can find it on Amazon. I have this podcast. I have music out there on Spotify. Please, if you hear the podcast, give me a rating. Tell other people about it. Podcast is actually starting to pick up, and I'm very, very glad about that. And I'm, of course, very, very thankful to the actual radio stations, CPL Radio and wide-ass open internet radio, that actually carry the podcast on the radio. Because I'm a radio guy. So thank you guys for listening. This is Radio. I am Ray Weaver.